The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Would you harbor me? Would I harbor you? Would you harbor a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, a heretic, convict, or spy? Would you harbor a runaway woman or child, a poet, a prophet, a king?
To be a Unitarian Universalist means we'll never be done with the work of telling the truth about oppression, the work of resisting any laws, policies, or practices that deny anyone their humanity, the work of stubbornly seeking out the spark of the divine in each other, no matter what the work of creating heaven on earth. To be a Unitarian Universalist also means we're not alone in the work. We are not alone because of our promises to love one another. We are not alone because we are companions on the journey. We grow ourselves into allies, helping one another get free, because none of us is truly free until all of us are free. That is what it means to be Unitarian Universalist. There is always work to be done, and you are not alone. We are challenged knowing we must live our life-affirming faith. We are comforted knowing we are in community. That's the truth of our religion, a truth I implore you to heed. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, part-time minister at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. And this morning, we are keeping our community safe and leaning into technology as we are worshiping fully online. Thank you for your flexibility. Thank you for showing up when it's so easy not to. It'd be so easy just to sit on the couch and have my coffee or tea without being in front of the screen. I'm so happy that you're here. We can still witness to each other's wonderful and beautiful selves. And I've asked our wonderful tech team, here we go, to put us, oh, we were just on gallery view, but let's go on gallery view for just a moment so we can all see who's here, feel that reality that we're not alone and that we are all worthy of love. And everyone, you can wave or say hi. So like, wow, we're still connected. This is real. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you to the tech team. Thank you for John and Mike for making this happen. Thank you for Linda for putting together the slides. And today we are continuing the conversation from last week's service on Martin Luther King Jr. So Preston, thank you for laying the groundwork, charging us to bend that moral arc of the universe toward justice. Today there will be parallels, there will be repeats, like Sweet Honey in the Rock, who sang our prelude, sang last week. And there'll be further exploration of what Martin Luther King thought about nonviolent resistance and what that might mean for our lives. King penned that we all are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. Oh, it's a beautiful way of saying we are all connected. And that's so true. And this is where we start our work, knowing that we are already connected, knowing that we're responsible for each other's well-being. So come, let us witness to that inescapable network of mutuality. Come, let us worship together. When we begin our worship service, as do congregations across the country and around the globe, by lighting a chalice, the symbol of our faith. Now is the time to go and grab a personal chalice, if you have one, a candle, the chalice app on your phone, or your inner flame. And let us all kindle our chalices together. I have someone to help me light my chalice. Let us all kindle our chalices together as I read these words by Summer Abayiti. Lighting this chalice may feel difficult today. This symbol of justice, known to be a light of hope for the marginalized, a message of sanctuary for the oppressed, a flame that feels lost or diminished somehow. How do we rekindle this fire of compassion? How do we rekindle the fire of mercy? A famous verse within the Quran tells us that with hardship comes ease. With hardship comes ease. We welcome the ease, O God of justice. We welcome the ease, O Spirit of love. We welcome the ease and rekindle this flame from our tears, our quiet suffering, from our collective prayers for those who cry for freedom. We welcome the ease and rekindle this flame. On behalf of those who feel abandoned and betrayed, we welcome the ease and rekindle this flame. For all of the children who ask, why can we not live in peace as other children do? May lighting this chalice today, no matter how difficult it may feel, help us to rekindle compassion and mercy within the deep crevices of our hearts so that we can once again bring justice and hope to a world struggling to find its humanity, struggling to find its soul. Amen. At Thomas Paine, each Sunday, we also light a second flame as a reminder of the need to work for peace in the world and in our hearts. And today, I encourage you to take a moment and think about that peace lamp in your heart. What would it feel like to have a lamp of peace ignited in your very being? Where would it lead you? Join with me in this responsive reading as you kindle the flame of peace in your heart. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world. Now, it feels like we're in COVID times, right? For all our hymns, feel free to sing along. Feel free to let the music wash over you. I like to mute myself. You probably like that too. I mute myself and then sing aloud. But depending on where you are or who is with you, that might not be ideal. So come, let us lift our spirits vocally or silently with our first hymn, This Little Light of Mine.
This little light of
Even though I could not hear you, I know that was a joyful noise. Thank you for singing. Our story today is Horton Hears a Who, and I have a special guest reader who's joining us here and for part one of the story. No, we'll see this.
On the 15th of May, in the jungle of Nuer, in the heat of the day, in the cool of the pool, he was splashing, enjoying the jungle's great joys, when Horton the elephant heard a small noise. So Horton stopped splashing. He looked toward the sound. "That's funny," thought Horton. "There's no one around." Then he heard it again, just a very faint yelp, as if some tiny person were calling for help. "I'll help you," said Horton. "But who are you? Where?" He looked and he looked. He could see nothing there, but a small speck of dust blowing past through the air. "I say," murmured Horton, "I've never heard tell of a small speck of dust that is able to yell. So you know what I think? Well, I think that there must be someone on top of that small speck of dust. Some sort of creature of very small size, too small to be seen by an elephant's eyes. Some poor little person who's shaking with fear that he'll blow in the pool. He has no way to steer. I'll just have to save him, because after all, a person's a person, no matter how small. So gently, and using the greatest of care, the elephant stretched his great trunk through the air, and he lifted the dust back and carried it over and placed it down safe on a very soft clover. "Humph," humped a voice. 'Twas a sour kangaroo, and the young kangaroo in her pouch said humph, too. "Why, that speck is as small as the head of the pin. A person on that, why, there never has been." "Believe me," said Horton, "I'll tell you sincerely, my ears are quite keen, and I heard them quite clearly. I know there's a person down there, and what's more, quite likely there's two, even three, even four. Quite likely a family, for all that we know, a family with children just starting to grow. So please," Horton said, "as a favor to me, try to not disturb them. Just please let them be." "I think you're a fool," laughed the sour kangaroo. And the young kangaroo in her pouch said, "Me too. You're the biggest blame fool in the jungle of Nuer." And the kangaroos plunged into the cool of the pool. "What terrible splashing," the elephant frowned. "I can't let my very small persons get drowned. I've got to protect them. I'm bigger than they." So he plucked up the clover and hustled away. Through the high jungle treetops, the news quickly spread. "He talks to a dust speck. He's out of his head. Just look at him walk with that speck on that flower." And Horton walked, worrying almost an hour. "Should I put this speck down?" Horton thought with alarm. "If I do, these small persons may come to great harm. I can't put it down, and I won't. After all, a person's a person, no matter how small." And Horton stopped walking. The speck voice was talking. The voice was so faint he could barely just hear it. "Speak up, please," said Horton. He put his ear near it. "My friend," came the voice. "You're a very fine friend. You've helped all us folks on this dust speck to no end. You've saved all our houses, our ceilings and floors. You've saved all our churches and grocery stores." "You mean," Horton gasped, "you have buildings there too?" "Oh yes," piped the voice, "we most certainly do." "I know," called the voice, "I'm too small to be seen, but I'm the mayor of a town that is friendly and clean. Our buildings to you would seem terribly small, but to us who aren't big, they're wonderfully tall. My town is called Whoville, for I am a Who, and we Whos are all thankful and grateful to you." And Horton called back to the mayor of the town, "You're safe now, don't worry, I won't let you down." Is that it?
So that's the first part of our story. And as you may know, you probably do, if you've come to many of my services, is like, I really like Dr. Seuss. And so many of his well-known books tackle large, complicated social issues in ways that are approachable and engaging. And so in this first installment, we meet Horton the Elephant, a regular in Seuss's tales, and Horton hears a small voice and comes to realize that there are buildings and people on this speck of dirt that he wasn't aware of. He wasn't aware of this reality, and it was all but hidden because he couldn't see it. Horton is showing us the first step, in my mind, of nonviolent resistance, and pretty much the first step of any social justice work. The first step is noticing something which is either unseen or is ignored by others, noticing an inequality, noticing a community, seeing a community whose voice is not heard here literally. Martin Luther King Jr. did this, pointing out that institutional racism and oppression didn't end with the abolition of slavery. He saw and spoke up about the hard truths of inequality and equity, which so many ignore. So here's, I want you to think about what you hear, proverbially, not just with your ears. What do you hear? What do you notice? Is there a community or an instance where you notice injustice, especially in places that you could, if you chose to, ignore it? Horton has the option to ignore the voice. He doesn't have to do anything. And if we come from any privilege, we sometimes have that option too of ignoring an injustice. If Horton hears a who, what do you hear? And I encourage us, this is where I want to have some talking, some back and forth. We can use the raise hand function, or you can type in the chat, and we'll just, you know what? We'll just see how it goes. What do you hear? What have you heard?
It's a little tough to, the ask is things that you hear that aren't being heard, and social media being what it is, social media is everywhere. We're all swimming in social media. It's a echo chamber. Those of us who are concerned about these, about attacks on American citizens by ICE agents that have a very limited remit and ought not to be harassing U.S. citizens, much less killing them, is all we hear because of our echo chamber, because we're concerned. And so I think that may contribute to what it is that you're asking. What do you hear that no one else hears? I mean, what we hear is what we all hear, but others outside of this community may not be listening.
Absolutely, yes, thank you.
So I think about what Horton is doing, and then I think about what is happening in Europe and the way the NATO nations are rallying around Greenland and sending troops to protect Greenland from the aggressors, which are the United States of America, which is the United States of America, unfortunately. Of course, I'm not referring to any of us on this Zoom call because I'm pretty much convinced that people that attend a UU fellowship are not in favor of invading sovereign nations. So maybe that's a bad assumption on my part, but it does remind me of what's happening right now.
I hear the people in Ukraine who, in all of the chaos of Venezuela and Greenland and everything else going on, are almost being forgotten and are freezing in their homes and under attack.
We can continue to think about this and continue to think about other parallels we see. Thank you for the reflection.
Can you give me a thumbs up if you wanted to share? All right. Kay wanted to say something, and I think
Great.
Hit the wrong button.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Kay.
I sometimes get frustrated because I know all these things. Well, no, I don't know everything that's going on, but I know enough of them. And yet I feel that given my limitations, there's such a little bit that I can do. Or since we're talking about worldwide problems, what TPUF can do.
Yeah, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by the barriers. Let's keep those thoughts, those questions, those concerns in your minds as we continue. We're gonna sing or listen and then have more of the story and then talk a little bit more.
But just as he spoke to the mayor of the Speck, three big jungle monkeys climbed up Horton's neck. The Wickersham brothers came shouting, "What rot! This elephant's talking to who's who are not. There aren't any who's, and they don't have a mayor, and we're going to stop all this nonsense, so there." They snatched Horton's clover. They carried it off to a black-bottom eagle named Vlad Vladikov. A mighty strong eagle, a very swift wing, and they said, "Will you kindly get rid of this thing?" And before the poor elephant could even speak, that eagle flew off with the flower in his beak. All that late afternoon and far into the night, that black-bottomed bird flapped his wings in fast flight, while Horton chased after with groans over stones that tattered his toenails and battered his bones, and begged, "Please don't harm all my little folks who have as much as right to live as us bigger folks do." But far, far beyond him, that eagle kept flapping, and over his shoulder called back, "Quit your yapping. I'll fly the night through. I'm a bird. I don't mind it, and I'll hide this tomorrow. Well, you'll never find it." And at 6:56 the next morning, he did it. It sure was a terrible place that he hid it. He let that small clover drop somewhere inside of a great patch of clovers 100 miles wide. "Find that," sneered the bird, "but I think you will fail." And he left with a flip of his black bottomed tail. I find I'll find it, cried Horton. I'll find it or bust. I shall find my friends on my small speck of dust. And clover by clover by clover with care, he picked up and searched them and called, "Are you there?" But clover by clover by clover he found. That was the one that he sought for was not around. And by noon, poor old Horton, more dead than alive, had picked, searched, and piled up 9,005. Then on through the afternoon, hour after hour, till he found them at last on the 3,000,000th flower. "My friends," cried the elephant, "tell me, do you tell? Are you safe? Are you sound? Are you whole? Are you well?" From down on the speck came the voice of the mayor. "We've really had trouble, much more than our share. When that black-bottomed birdie let go and we dropped, we landed so hard that our clocks have all stopped. Our teapots are broken, our rocking chair is smashed, and our bicycle tires all blew up when we crashed. So, Horton, please," pleaded the voice of the mayor's, "will you stick by us, Hughes, while we're making repairs?" "Of course," Horton answered, "of course I will stick. I'll stick by you small folks through thin and through thick." "Humph," humphed a voice. "For almost 2 days you've run wild and insisted on chattering with persons who've never existed. Such carrying-ons in our peaceable jungle. We've had quite enough of your bellowing, bungle, and I'm here to state," snapped the big kangaroo, "that your silly, nonsensical game is all through." And the young kangaroo in her pouch said, "Me too." With help of the Wickersham brothers and dozens of Wickersham uncles and Wickersham cousins and Wickersham in-laws whose help I've engaged, you're going to be roped and you're going to be caged. And as for that your dusk speck, ha, that we shall boil in a hot steaming kettle of beazle nut oil." "Boil it?" gasped Horton. "Oh, that you can't do. It's all full of persons. They'll prove it to you." "Mr. Mayor, Mr.
Thank you. That was our second installment, and the parallels here are stark. And there were some comments in the chat too. Cindy mentioned the Somalian community in Minnesota that was not seen until recently. And David Perry said that in part one, and you can see it again in part two, struck by Seuss's portrayal of that young kangaroo echoing the older kangaroo, what is he called? A sour kangaroo, just saying, "Me too, me too." And the parallels are stark, not only in is this community of who's ignored, but they and their ally are being attacked. So the Wickersham brothers, the sour kangaroo, they're saying this doesn't exist, this hardship doesn't exist. And the Wickersham relatives are gonna cage up Horton and boil the community they don't see and they don't hear. Because the truth is that when people speak up or stand up against injustice, violence is an all too common response. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed because he stood up to speak against injustice. Renee Good was shot and killed because she took a stand against injustice. Those who have power or influence want to keep that power and often don't want to shift or change anything. Right? The who's existence on that speck of dust doesn't impact the monkeys or the kangaroo, but still they want to get away with it. And bringing up issues of concern is often a threat to the comfort, often a threat to the complacency that we might feel. Because if I don't hear the who's, then I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to change my life. I don't have to try to help a community in need. If I just go on my own life, I don't have to worry about what's happening in Minneapolis and in other large cities around the country. If it isn't my friends or my family at risk, then why should I step into the figurative or literal line of fire? Right? And then we're going to try this again where we share our thoughts in community. You can keep in mind the injustices you were thinking about, other things that came up, other parallels with the story, something mentioned, something new. And I want you to think of as a little bit of framing, it doesn't have to be exactly here, but think of the barriers which exist. And the barriers can be explicit, they can be human constructed, or they can be implicit, cultural, societal. So let's open our eyes a bit more. Let's help each other see more broadly as we share.
Sherry, you're good to go?
Yes, I just wanted to say hello. And when I saw the eagles taking the little WHO speck of dust, I thought of ICE agents just taking people and taking them to away and taking them to unknown places.
Yeah, a scary, scary reality. And there's also a comment in the chat from Eric Johnson. I love the message, but it puzzles me. If the WHO clover was safe in a sea of indistinguishable clovers, if no one knew it was there, then why don't we just leave it to fix their broken thing instead of bringing them back to the group which is looking to oppress it? Very good questions.
Well, Cheeks, I can unmute myself. I think that the privilege or entitlement and money are barriers in many, many areas. And I would say more specifically, the people's perspectives are shaped by their environment in a way that sometimes makes certain things seem obvious or not obvious in ways that don't apply to others. A great example of that would be, there is this amazing uptick in EV adoption in the United States, and then things have sort of stalled. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. And I think when people from not in the United States look at the United States and ask about why do you have so many trucks? Why does so many people have cars? Well, pollution is pollution that, climate change, geography. The US has a unique geography that is not the same as the way the population density looks in Europe or China or elsewhere. And so sometimes just because of differences that the people living in a certain area may have no control over, their lived reality and the details that they face may not be the same as others. And so others' solutions to their problems may not be the solutions to their problems quite as cleanly. Linda?
You know, a lot of people don't react to crisis until it hits them, until it touches them. And one of my dear friends who grew up on the main line, in extreme wealth, when she and her husband wanted to have children, they were unable to. So they adopted a boy from Mexico. And he is now graduating from college. And she is so worried. She sent me a video of a Hispanic looking man who was coming out of a Home Depot in Minneapolis, and the ICE agents threw him on the ground, beat him up. Then they finally determined after a couple of hours that he was an American citizen. And so they dropped him off in a parking lot of a Walmart bleeding and dumped him there. And Michelle said, that could be my son. That could be my son. And quite honestly, if anyone has skin that may be a little darker or has a look that isn't totally Caucasian, that could be anybody's son. And to me, that is chilling. It is chilling that this is where we are right now.
As I was preparing this and I was putting the sort of devil's advocate of if it's not impacting me, I was reminded of Stephanie Vincent, a high school friend of mine whom many of you have know or have interacted with communities, and she has taken it upon herself to note where ICE is in the Norristown area. And her son-in-law was just taken by ICE. They have a GoFundMe trying to get legal fees, but that's the sort of thing that's happening. It now is. It's not, I can't ignore it anymore. Yes, Cindy.
I think, thank you everyone for your really good comments. I agree with Linda is that if it doesn't affect you, which it doesn't affect a lot of us in the white middle class suburbs. I had for many, many years access, sorry about that, to working in hospitals. I had access to not only patients and families who were discriminated against, but employees. And I continue, there's a large population of immigrant nurses that we brought into this country because we had our own nursing shortage, and they're afraid. But I can easily be just in the suburbs of my home and at home working, and I don't have the access that I had to the reality of people's lives. One of my nursing assistants a few years ago lost her son to gun violence in North Philadelphia. And I said, "Oh, I am so sorry." And she said, "Cindy, this is our reality. You have no idea. My nephew I lost to gun violence last year." You know, so we don't have access living out here in the white middle class suburbs. And even our fellowship, and we've said this before, is white. So we don't have access to the realities of what these people, what so many people are living. And how do we put ourselves in that environment where we do have access and where we can help? You know, how do we do that? I think that's the question. Because it's really concerning that it doesn't affect us. It does Somalia, the Somalians in Minnesota, that doesn't affect me here in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia suburbs. But how do we, you know, expose ourselves to the realities of what our fellow human beings are going through? Thank you.
Yeah, as with so much of theology of social justice, that I don't have the answers. I don't know that our religion has the answers apart from do the hard work, notice it, live your faith. But as we transition now to our next section, let's think about what we're singing or what we're hearing in these songs too. And our next hymn is "We Shall Overcome."
We'll go hand in hand. We'll go hand in hand.
Each Sunday, we live our faith by listening. And at Matters of the Heart, we set aside a moment for people to share the highs and lows, their experiences, their emotions, which overflow, which outpour into this beloved community. And that's one side of it, the sharing. But the more important aspect, the more important side is that we listen to one another. We recognize our worthiness, we recognize our beauty, our divinity, by opening our hearts and hearing each other. So come, let us enter to this holy practice of deep listening. Let us sing once more to close out our Matters of the Heart, and then we'll hear. Yep. Let's sing. Our prayer today is from Martin Luther King Jr. in a December 1957 speech. In his words, God, grant that right here in America and all over this world, we will choose the highway, a way in which men will live together as brothers, a way in which the nations of the world will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, a way in which every man will respect the dignity and worth of all human persons, a way in which every nation will allow justice to run down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream, a way in which men will do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God, a way in which men will be able to stand up, and in the midst of oppression, in the midst of darkness and agony, they will be able to stand there and love their enemies, bless those persons who curse them, pray for those individuals that spitefully use them. And this is the way they will bring us once more into that society which we think of as the brotherhood of man. This will be the day when white people, colored people, whether they are brown or whether they are yellow or whether they are black, will join together and stretch out their arms and be able to cry out, free at last, free at last. Great God Almighty, we are free at last. Amen. Let us hear now the third and final installment of Horton Hears a Who.
Mr. Mayor, Horton called. Mr. Mayor, you've got to prove now that you really are there. So call a big meeting, get everyone out, make sure every who holler, make sure every who shout, make sure every who scream. If you don't, every who is going to end up in a bezel nut stew. And down on the dust speck, the scared little mayor quick called his a big meeting in Whoville Town Square, and his people cried loudly. They cried out in fear. We are here, we are here, we are here, we are here. Elephant smiled. That was as clear as a bell. You kangaroos surely heard that very well. All I heard, snapped the big kangaroo, was the breeze and the faint sound of wind through the far distant trees, and I heard no small voices, and you didn't either. And the young kangaroo in her pouch said, me neither. Grab him, they shouted, and cage the big dope, lasso his stomach with 10 miles of rope, tie the knots so tight he'll never shake loose, then dunk that dumb speck in the bezel nut juice. Horton fought back with great vigor and vim, but the Wickersham gang was too many for him. They beat him, they mauled him, they started to haul him into his cage, but he managed to call to the mayor, don't give up, I believe in you all. A person's a person, no matter how small. And if you very small persons will not have to die, if you make yourselves heard, so come on now and try. The mayor grabbed a tom-tom, he started to smack it, and all over Whoville, they whooped up a racket. They rattled tin kettles, they beat on brass pans, on garbage pail tops and old cranberry cans. They blew on bazookas and blasted great toots on clarinets, oomphahs, boomphahs, and flutes. Great gusts of loud racket rang high through the air. They rattled and shook the whole sky. And the mayor called up through the howling and mad hullabaloo, hey, Horton, how's this? Is our sound coming through? And Horton called back, I can hear you just fine, but the kangaroo's ears aren't as strong quite as mine. They don't hear a thing. Are you sure all your boys are doing their best? Are they all making noise? Are you sure every who down in Whoville is working? Quick, look through your town. Is there anyone shirking? Through the town rushed the mayor, from the east to the west, but everyone seemed to be doing his best. Everyone seemed to be yapping or yipping. Everyone seemed to be beeping or bipping, but it wasn't hard enough. All this ruckus and roar, he had to find someone to help him make more. He raced through each building. He searched floor to floor. And just as he felt he was getting nowhere and almost about to give up in despair, he suddenly burst through the door and that mayor discovered one shirker, quite hidden away in the Fairfax apartment 12J. A very small shirker named Jojo was standing and bouncing a yo-yo, not making a sound, not a yip, not a chirp. And the mayor rushed inside and he grabbed the young twerp. And he climbed with the lad up the Eiffelberg Tower. This, cried the mayor, is your town's darkest hour, the time for all who's who have blood that is red to come to the aid of their country, he said. We've got to make noises in greater amounts, so open your mouth, lad, for every voice counts. Thus he spoke as he climbed. When they got to the top, the lad cleared his throat and he shouted out, yap! And that one yap, that one small extra yap, put it over. Finally, at last, from that speck on that clover, their voices were heard. They rang out clear and clean. An elephant smiled. Do you see what I mean? They've proved they are persons, no matter how small, and their whole world was saved by the smallest of all. How true, yes, how true, said the big kangaroo. And from now on, you know what I'm planning to do? From now on, I'm going to protect them with you. And the young kangaroo in her pouch said, me too. From sun in the summer, from rain when it's fallish, I'm going to protect them no matter how smallish.
Thank you, Micah. Did a fantastic job. And that's the point right there. That's the point. Each and every voice was needed for the WHO community to be heard. Your voice is needed and necessary. So is the person next to you on the screen, and also him and her and them, right? When I say that your voice is needed, I'm being both literal and proverbial. You use your vocal cords and speak truth to power. Say something when you notice an injustice, but also think about the other ways you can work toward a more loving, more just world. And Cindy had some, we all have mentioned some. Cindy had a great one, support locally, absolutely. What can you do to overcome the barriers that were mentioned earlier? What small or large things can we do to help our community, to help our country? What else came up to you in this story and our discussions? Let's lift up our vision of resistance and share the hopes, the ideas we have. It's our last, one last time of joining in the confusion of hearing and sharing over Zoom.
I think those of us with children should be modeling good behavior, because nothing will help raise up another generation of people who are empathic and community-minded than seeing that starting at home.
Yeah, it was seeing the little kangaroo agree with the hate, but then agree with the love and support at the end. Yeah.
So just wading into the local politics of the school board, and again, to everybody's point, is that there is not a lot of diversity there either. And there's a reason for that, to Kelly's point, is it's time for us to step up. We are not the oppressed, and we're not the ones dealing with it, but we have to step up. So many of us going to the demonstrations, Indivisible has organized the social action around, you know, staffing the shelters locally and bringing in food and clothes for the shelters. That's local. And then, of course, you know, serving as we can. It's not for everybody politics, but it is. I think we're an army. We're the cavalry, and we're coming in, and we're going to come in strong. And 2026 is going to be our year to take back and continue to speak truth to power. I think we'll do that for sure. Thank you.
I think when we see injustice, we have to call it out. And I think we have to not allow people to gaslight. And if that means responding in a respectful way on social media, that's one thing you can do. But more importantly, talking to people that you know that are in your inner circle, even when it's hard. And, you know, it may end up leading to not having a relationship with this person. I no longer have a relationship with my brother or my one cousin that I was very close to, because I can't have that in my sphere, and I can't change their feelings. So if there are marginal people in your family that will listen to you, please talk to them. And if there's social injustice occurring, document it. If you see someone being dragged out of their car or brutally beaten, and believe me, it's happening in this area, folks. I mean, we don't want to think about it, but take out your cell phone, record it. You know, you may save a life.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I also want to lift up the difficulty in the story and in our truths sometimes, that when Horton looks to the WHOs, he pushes them to do most of the work in saving themselves. He says, it's on you. You have to make more noise. That isn't always fair. So just noting that also, we all have a voice. We all can do something. And to say, you must do the work is Any final thoughts before we sing once more? Let us then lift every voice and sing with lift every voice and sing. This was a repeat from last week. So. Extinguish my chalice, and I invite you, if you have lit your chalice in your heart and in your soul, keep that flame lit. If you have lit a physical chalice or a virtual on your phone, extinguish that one with me, knowing that the flame in your heart will continue on. With these words, again from Martin Luther King Jr. So the question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists we will be. Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? Amen and blessed be.